वैत्रेयकपाणय ज्ञान मुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृत दुहे नमः। हरे कृष्णा। वेलकम बैक टू द भगवद गीता भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। वी आर नाउ इन द 12th चैप्टर ऑफ द भगवद गीता डिस्कसिंग भक्ति योगा। इन दैट वी हैव डिस्कस्ड इन द फर्स्ट सेक्शन हाउ वर्शिप ऑफ द पर्सनल एस्पेक्ट ऑफ द एब्सोल्यूट ट्रूथ इज प्रेफरेबल टू वर्शिप ऑफ द इम्पर्सनल एस्पेक्ट। Let's look at the overview here quickly. So verses 1 to 7 talked about how worship of personal form is higher than the worship of the impersonal Brahman. And then verses 8 to 12 talk about the progressive stages of bhakti. That's what we were discussing. We discussed 8 and 9. Now we'll discuss the 10th one. And after this, the next section will be qualities that endear one to Krishna. So in this way, this chapter basically talks about first, how bhakti is the best process for transcendence, then how bhakti can be practiced at multiple levels, and how one can cultivate the qualities that will make one into a devotee. So ultimately, who is a devotee? A devotee is one who loves Krishna and one whom Krishna loves. So these qualities help us to endear ourselves to Krishna. That means we become better devotees by that. So in this way, the chapter talks about bhakti yoga in three different ways. Let's look at 12.10. Abhyase pya samarthosi mat karma paramo bhava madartham api karmani kurvan siddhim avapsyasi. So abhyase pya asamarthosi. Asamartha means incapable. Abhyasa was what I was talked about in the previous verse. Abhyasa yogena tato mamichhaptum dhananjaya. So by the practice of Abhyasa yoga, obtain the desire to attain me. So abhyase pi asamarthosi. That if you are incapable of doing Abhyas, then matkarma paramo bhava. That make my karma the supreme goal. Become dedicated to working for me. Paramo can become supreme. Paramo can also mean mat paraha. Fix the mind on me. Make me your ultimate aspiration. Mat karma paramo bhava. So there is a difference between mat parama and mat karma parama. So mat para means our heart, our soul, our mind, our intelligence, our whole inner being is offered to Krishna. That is, so mat para is is a higher level than mat karma paramo. So mat karma paramo means we are doing various works, but we understand the work that I do for Krishna is the most important, and work for him. So what I try to do is I do work for Krishna, and I try to make all my work into an offering to Krishna. And then what will happen by this? Madartham api karmani. If you in this way work for me, kurvan siddhimavapsyasi, you will attain perfection by this also. So Krishna is taking the levels lower, and he's telling that, okay, it's like if a person is trapped at the bottom of a well and somebody sends down a rope, and this person says, okay, you stretch your hands up and then you stand on your toes and pull up, and then I can catch the rope. The person says, I can't do that. And the little person brings the rope further down. Okay, now you just raise your hands a little bit up, you can catch the rope. Then when the person can't do that also, the rope comes further down. And the person says, okay, now the rope is right around your waist. All that you have to just tie it around the waist, I'll pull you out. So it's like that. Krishna is extending down the mercy lower and lower. And he's saying over here, madartham api karmani. If you work for me in this way, kurvan siddhim avapsyasi, siddhi you will attain. What is the siddhi? That siddhi is the word siddhi literally means perfection. So Krishna has used the word siddhi several times in the Bhagavad Gita. The most prominent use, which is relevant over here, is anushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yadati siddhaye tam api siddhanam kaschin mam veti tatvataha. So yadati siddhaye, very few people endeavor for perfection in 7.3, Krishna says, and thousands few endeavor for perfection, and out of those who endeavor for perfection, even fewer actually achieve perfection. So in this way, what Krishna is telling over there is he uses the word perfection to refer to the quest for transcendence. So sometimes the word siddhi is also used for yogic perfections or mystic perfections. You know, there is anima siddhi, there is laghima siddhi. And that is with respect, these are material perfections. But this whole chapter is a bhakti yoga chapter. And that's why the yogic or mystic siddhis are not being talked about over here. Here Krishna is talking about the devotional perfections. And those devotional perfections ultimately culminate in pure love for Krishna. Krishna is saying that even by working for me, you will ultimately come to the level of attaining me. So now, when we look at this, matkarma paramo bhava, work for me. Let's try to understand this now. So in working for Krishna, there can be two sub-levels. Now work for Krishna, one can be the direct, do his work, that is render service to him. And an indirect can be offer him the fruits of our work. Now what is the difference between the two? Do his work means, for example, say during the book distribution marathon, we may go out and distribute books, or we may ourselves try to share Krishna's message, we may do some services in the temple. So that is do his work. So it's Krishna's work, it's Krishna's mission, and we help in Krishna's mission. It's do his work. And then there is also indirect, offer him the fruit of the work. So how do we offer him the fruits of the work? By offering him the part of the work that we are doing. That means, say we have our job, we have our profession, and we, whatever we earn, we give charity from that, and we try to spiritualize of the work that way. So matkarma paramo technically would mean do my work. But for a devotee, in the family life, the family is also, devotee tries to integrate with the spiritual life. Devotee tries to work for Krishna and integrate the whole family into the devotional service of Krishna. The devotee sees that my family members, if they are devotees, that's wonderful. But even if they are not devotees, still they are also parts of Krishna. And it is ultimately by Krishna's arrangement that I am placed in the situation amid these family members. And let me try to serve Krishna by taking care of them materially and spiritually. So in this way, this is what matkarma paramo bhava. So Prabhupada writes in the purport that he talks about this principle of material management, that every endeavor requires land, capital, organization and labor. So there is human resources, there is financial resources, there is infrastructural resources, and then there is organizational resources. So these are the four resources. Human resources will be labor, infrastructural resources will be land, and then financial resources will be capital, and then there is infrastructure, and then there is organizational. You know, everything that we have to organize it properly. So say a person wants to construct a builder wants to construct a building. So then there's capital required for that. Not only there is, first of all, land is required for anything. So we need the land on which we'll be constructing the building. Along with that, capital needed to purchase all the materials for constructing the building. Capital needed to hire labor also, who will be actually doing the building. And then there's organization required. There has to be some specially trained people who will manage and oversee the project, and they will make sure that everything is going according to plan. So these are required. Finances, land, capital, organization and labor. So Prabhupada is saying all these are included in matkarma paramo bhava. So whatever is these possible, one can work for Krishna. So Prabhupada writes, the only difference is that in materialism one works for the sake of self-gratification. Same work, however, can be perfect for the satisfaction of Krishna, and that is spiritual activity. So when we perform for the satisfaction of Krishna, that becomes spiritual activity. Prabhupada talks about how publication can also be done. How does this raise one to Krishna? This voluntary service to the cause of Krishna consciousness will help one rise to a higher state of love for God, whereupon one becomes perfect. So voluntary service to the cause of Krishna consciousness. Whatever we are doing, we could do it for other purposes, but we are doing it for Krishna. It's a voluntary service. And when we do this voluntary service for the sake of Krishna, for the cause of Krishna consciousness, by that we make spiritual advancement. Now, after this, Krishna goes one level downwards. And then he says, if somebody can't do that also, somebody can't work for Krishna also, then we may think that, oh, such a person who can't work for Krishna, get out. You are going to be a materialist, you are going to be a sinful person, you are going to go to hell. No, Krishna doesn't exhibit such an attitude. Krishna accommodates even those who, you could say, don't accommodate him. You know, this is Krishna's great love, that he accommodates even those who don't accommodate him. See, Krishna is himself already so accommodating. He says, first you offer your heart to me, or at least then try to think about me. If you can't do that, work for me. Now somebody says, what more can Krishna do? If you don't want to do even this much for me, then I reject you. Krishna says, no. Krishna is such a loving God that he accommodates even those who refuse to accommodate him. So how does he do that? He, by encouraging them towards a general spirit of sacrifice. Let's look at this verse. 12.11 Athaitadapya shaktosi kartum madyogam ashritaha sarvakarma falatyagam tatah kuru yatatmavan. So athaitad apya ashaktosi, atha etad, etad means what was described in the previous verse, ashaktosi, if one is not able to do even that, kartum madyogam ashritaha, so madyogam ashritaha, that means mat karma paramo bhava, working for me, even that means that level of connection with Krishna by working for him, if one can't do even that, then what should one do? Sarva karma phala tyagam, that give up all the work. Sarva karma phala tyagam, so give up the fruits of all the work, give up the basically the fruits of work. Tataha kuru yata atmavan, so atmavan, be self-situated. And this is a beautiful word, atmavan. Krishna has used this word atmavan earlier also in the Bhagavad Gita, especially in 2.45, Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunya Bhava Arjuna Nirdvandvo Nitya Sattvastho Niryoga Kshemam Atmavan. So there Krishna is saying that go beyond the three modes and become situated in transcendence. And when you're situated in transcendence, be free from realities. Nirdvandvo Nitya Sattvastho, be in pure goodness, that is transcendence. And Niyoga Kshema Atmavan, be free from the considerations of gain and loss by holding on to the Atma. Now the word Van means possessor, just like we have Dhanavan, that means one who is the possessor of wealth, or Bhagyavan, one who is the possessor of fortune. So like that Dhanavan, so like that Atmavan means one who is the possessor of the soul. Now, normally our idea is that the possessor and the possessed and the possession are different. Now for example, now I may have this computer. So I am the possessor and this is the possession. So the normal understanding is the possession and the possessor have to be different. So then, if the possession and the possessor have to be different, and if I am the Atma, then I am the possessor. But if I have to become Atmavan, then I have to become the possession. So how can the same be the possessor as well as the possession? How can the same be the owner and the owned? So this is indicative of the link at the level of consciousness. That means, if a person may be a owner, like sometimes when people get old, and nowadays very tragically, very heartbreaking, sometimes people get diseases like Alzheimer's, and they just lose their memory completely. When they lose their memory, or not just memory actually, they just lose their capacity for rational thinking, capacity for recognizing, capacity for appropriate and adequate emotional responses. So at that time, the person may be the owner of the house, but if the person has got Alzheimer's, that person is not aware that I am the owner of the house. The person just doesn't know anything at that time. So like that, we may be in possession of something, but we may not know that we are in possession of that thing. Of course, other is also possible that we don't possess anything and we think we are the possessors. Actually, we don't own anything. You know, whatever we think is my house and my home, my car and all these things, vijanasya moho yamaham ameti, they are all temporary things. As we have discussed earlier, things may belong, but for how long? No, they are just temporarily there with us. So that is one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is, okay, for whatever period they are there with me, they are there, fine. And I will use them as much as I can. But still, the point remains that when I am using them, even at that time, when I have certain things for a temporary period, at that time I am the possessor of them. But even when I am the possessor, I need to remember that I am the possessor. If I have a bank account secretly kept, and I still forget that I have the bank account, then it's as good as I don't possess that. So when Atmavan, the word is used over here, what it means is we are the soul, and the soul itself being a part of Krishna, the soul, and at the level of the soul, all of us are like princes. We are all the beloved children of Krishna, and He is our all attractive Supreme Lord. So, in that sense, at the spiritual level, we are all fabulously wealthy because we are connected to the supremely wealthy person. Now, when we are like this, why do we feel ourselves often bereaved, often deprived, often in a state of neediness? That is because we have forgotten our connection with Krishna. So to become Atmavan means to become aware of ourselves as the Atma, and to become aware of the precious and irreplaceable wealth that is available to us at the level of the Atma. So now, what makes us not Atmavan? We could say Anatmavan. We are no longer conscious of the Atma. That is material infatuations. The more a person is obsessed with material things, to that extent that person cannot understand the spiritual reality. To that extent, that person becomes oblivious of the spiritual reality. So here Krishna is telling that even if one starts the sacrifice, one stops working and one starts sacrificing, then from that point onwards, one slowly develops the spirit of the spirit of selfless sacrifice, and that gradually makes one self-aware. But gradually, as it is, you know, the only way we can find ourselves is by losing ourselves in something greater than ourselves. The way we can find ourselves is by losing ourselves in something greater than ourselves. When we are obsessed with I is the center of our consciousness, and that I consciousness becomes like a black hole which sucks us inside into ourselves, and then we feel either inferiority complex or superiority complex. Now when I'm thinking of myself and I look around and see, oh, others are better than me, then I feel miserable. And if I think that I am better than others, then I get superiority complex, I get pride and arrogance and ego by that. So either way, we can't find ourselves this way. We just get lost, you know. But when we pour ourselves out in doing something greater than ourselves, then the obsession of our thoughts with ourselves goes away. And then as we absorb ourselves in something greater than ourselves, the best such cause is the cause of loving and serving Krishna. When we do that, then that inspiration which comes by absorbing ourselves in something greater than ourselves, that helps to bring out the latent divinity, the latent spiritual potential, the latent material qualities, the skills and the grit and gumption, all that comes out when we find an inspiring enough cause in which we can pour ourselves. So the whole principle of bhakti is, it's not that a devotee is constantly thinking, I'm not the body and the soul, I'm not the body and the soul, I'm not the body and the soul. A devotee is not obsessed in that. Yes, we can analyze, and whenever material temptations trouble us, we can surely think that, yes, I'm not the body and soul, these things are not going to satisfy me, why should I do these those things? That is good, a devotee should can and should think like that. But over and above that, a devotee should also think about how I am the... I am a servant of Krishna. A devotee's primary focus is on how can I serve Krishna? Krishna's mission, Krishna's message, it's so wonderful. I want to share it with the world. I want to do whatever I can, my small part in sharing it with the world. And as the devotee becomes absorbed more and more in this cause, then the self-consciousness in terms of self-obsession decreases. And from that point onwards, a devotee becomes more and more spiritually aware. There is self-consciousness and there is self-realization. You know, when people say that I'm self-conscious, so the two are not the same things. For example, when somebody is told to give a speech on a podium for the first time, then that person in an informal setting may be able to talk continuously for 3 hours. But when the person is placed on a podium, on the stage, is told to speak, 3 minutes speaking becomes difficult. Because when we are in the public eye, we often become self-conscious. But, you know, when we are self-conscious, that doesn't mean we are self-realized. The word self, conscious and realized might have similar connotations, but the self that we are talking about is quite different. So, when you talk about self-consciousness, that means, you know, I'm just thinking about myself. But the self that I'm thinking about is not truly me. When I think of self-consciousness, I'm thinking about, is my dress proper or not? You know, are my looks proper or not? Is my facial expression good or not? Am I having a good smile on my face? So when we talk about self-consciousness, in that sense, it's a don't be too self-conscious. That self-conscious often refers to how others perceive us and how we look in the eyes of the others. That will never lead to self-realization. So actually a devotee is to stop worrying too much about how other world perceives. And a devotee is to focus on thinking about how I can engage in those activities which will purify me, which will please Krishna, and therefore by Krishna's grace, my inner spiritual awareness, my spiritual consciousness will awaken, and then I will understand that I am the Atma. So, you know, we don't have to be self-conscious. We want to become self-realized. And to become self-realized, we have to be Krishna-conscious. So, and now here when I'm using the word self-conscious, and it's in a particular sense that being conscious of how the world thinks about us and how the world looks at us. Anybody doesn't have to be too self-conscious. And then now, here the word Atmavan. What is Krishna telling? That gradually, that if one cannot even work for him, and slowly, step by step, by working for Krishna, by working in a general spirit of sacrifice, karma phala tyaga, then what will happen? The ethos of sacrifice will be developed. And once the ethos of sacrifice is developed, as it matures, one will become self-aware. Tataha kuru yata atmavan. So, Prabhupada writes in the purport something very interesting, which indicates how broad is Krishna's concern and how accommodating Krishna is. So it may be that one is unable to sympathize with the activity of Krishna consciousness because of social, familial or religious considerations or because of some other impediments. So then, for one who has such a problem, it is advised that he sacrifice the accumulated result of his activities to some good cause. So what is the point here that is being made? To some good cause. The important point is that cultivate the ethos of selflessness. Cultivate the value of sacrifice. So we have discussed elaborately in our Ishopanishad class about humanitarian work, about social service. From the Bhagavad Gita's perspective here, the Bhagavad Gita does accommodate the principle of sacrifice, which is often evident in the activities of people who are doing some social welfare, they are concerned for others. And that concern for others is the beginning, is a significant step forward in the evolution of their consciousness, which will ultimately gradually bring them to Krishna consciousness. So Krishna is bringing the ladder of mercy down to accommodate even those who can't accommodate him. That means because one's family is very anti-devotional, and because of that one can't practice spiritual life. So at that time, it is not that one has to entirely give up everything. No, one can at that time also keep practicing spiritual life in a discreet way, whatever is possible. And then one can in other ways develop the essential spirit of sacrifice and selflessness that is at the heart of Krishna consciousness. Now Prabhupada goes on and quotes another in Prabhupada's purport is so accommodating here in Bhagavad Gita when he says yataha pravrittir bhutanam. So yataha pravrittir bhutanam, this is 18.46, actually the full verse is yataha pravrittir bhutanam yena sarvam idam tatam swakarmanatam abhyarcha siddham vindati manavah. That by worshipping that Supreme Lord with one's work, siddhim vindati, one will attain the supreme perfection. So, who is that Lord whom one should worship? In that connection it is said, yataha pravrittir bhutanam, that Lord from whom all of existence has emanated, from whom all the pravrittis of the living entities have emanated, yena sarvam idam tatam, by whom the whole creation is pervaded. It is that Lord. So what the point that is being made over here is that whatever propensities we have, now we are not talking about sinful propensities here. The word propensities is used in terms of varanashram situation. You know, somebody has Kshatriya propensity, Vaishya propensity, Shudra propensity. So that has been, that one has to respond to, act according to it, but don't just act according to them in a materialistic way. Act according to them with a spiritualistic understanding. Spiritualistic understanding means that one has to recognize that these propensities are ultimately material, but the person who is activating these propensities, because of whom those propensities are getting the energy, getting the consciousness to act. So the propensities are situated in the subtle body. The soul is spiritual. So whatever propensities I have, I cannot wish them away. But I can accommodate and elevate them. I can engage them in Krishna's service. So that's how one should work. So if one can't engage in Krishna's service, at least in a general ethos of selflessness. So here we see the ladder of mercy going downwards. And in this way, one can come to spiritual consciousness. So, you know, we shouldn't label people based on just their ecclesiastical affiliations. Jiva Goswami, in his writings, makes this point, very important point, that one should not accept a spiritual master based on ecclesiastical considerations. Ecclesiastical considerations means, the word ecclesiastical comes primarily from the church, that within the church there is a hierarchy of power, there is organizational structure. So the structure of the church is called as ecclesiastics. That's the adjective used to describe that. So Jiva Goswami explains that one should not accept a spiritual master simply based on ecclesiastical considerations. That is, I am from this caste and this is a Goswami in my caste, therefore I will accept this person. That's ecclesiastical consideration. Yeah, okay. That it's not that just because somebody is in a particular position in the hierarchy, that doesn't automatically make that person spiritually advanced. So we shouldn't give undue weightage to ecclesiastical things. So that means if somebody might not externally be connected with any spiritual organization, but if that person has an ethos of selflessness, if that person has concern for others, we should be able to see the good in that person. Yes, that person may not have Atma Gyan right now. That person may not have Bhagavad Bhakti right now. And If we want to look at a negative, what is that person? You know, the person breaking the regulative principles, he doesn't have, that person doesn't have this, that person doesn't have that. And we can blame that person for so many things. But we don't necessarily, that's not the only way of looking at things. The other way of looking at things could be that, yes, what that person doesn't have is maybe a fact, but what the person has also, we can see that person truly has a ethos of selflessness to some extent. Then we can appreciate that. Chanakya Pandit says that, you know, we should see, take gold even from a filthy place. And that was Srila Prabhupada's vision. How else could Srila Prabhupada have engaged the hippies who, from the material vision, for to speak of the spiritual vision, even from the material vision, they did not have any really good qualities. They were unclean, they were in many ways very unregulated, they were unemployed, they were rebellious, undisciplined. But Srila Prabhupada saw they have a spark of spirituality in them, and he fanned that spark and enabled it to grow. So therefore, that's how one moves forward upwards towards Krishna. So now, after describing this, Krishna goes to the next level. Let's look at the next level. This is the single most complicated verse of the Bhagavad Gita. And the different acharyas have given different commentaries, and we'll try to look at some of those commentaries in this verse. Shreyo hi jnanam abhyasaj jnanat dhyanam vishishyate dhyanat karma falat tyagas tyagat chantir anantaram. So shreyo means better. Shreyo hi jnanam abhyasaj, that better than jnana is practice. Jnana dhyanam vishishyate, better than jnana is dhyana. So if you can, sorry, shreyo hi jnanam abhyasaj, that better than jnana is abhyas, better than, let's look at Prabhupada's translation, you cannot take this to as practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. That means abhyas is higher than jnana, and better than knowledge, however, is meditation. Jnana dhyanam vishishyate, and then dhyanat karma falatyagas, better than dhyana is karma falatyaga, and then tyagaj shantiranantaram, by tyag one will get peace. So what is so complicated about this verse? We have to understand the normal hierarchy that is there in the Bhagavad Gita to understand what is the problem with this verse. So we look at, so this is how it is. This is Vishwanatha Thakur's analysis of this verse. Then there is Balde Vidyabhushan's analysis of this verse. And then there is Prabhupada's analysis. But before we go into this analysis, first we need to understand what is the problem. So, okay, there is some hierarchy that is described. Actually, the problem with this hierarchy seems to be that it just makes the whole previous hierarchy of the Bhagavad Gita topsy-turvy, upside down. So what is the earlier hierarchy of the Bhagavad Gita? If you see, Karma Yoga is one level of practice. And after Karma Yoga, one comes to Jnana. And then after Jnana, higher than that is Dhyana. And higher than dhyana is bhakti. In bhakti, there is first sadhana bhakti, then there is kevala bhakti, there is pure devotion. So, or spontaneous devotion, raganuga bhakti, whichever you want to look at it. So, the normal hierarchy is karma phala tyaga, that is a part of karma yoga. Then after that, when one goes beyond that, then one starts practicing jnana yoga. So, jnana yoga means that one practices the principle of pure devotion, on principle of pure devotion, principle of contemplation, contemplative analysis. It's primarily in philosophical, speculative analysis that is there, that is jnana. And then beyond that, there is dhyana, where there is meditation. And at that meditation, generally, it is aimed for meditation in the super soul. So because one is moving closer to the spiritual reality, so that's meditation, dhyana is considered to be higher than jnana. And above dhyana is the level of bhakti. Because one is fixing the mind on Krishna. In dhyana, one is trying to move towards the Paramatma. So in karma phala tyaga, One is basically getting detached from matter, but one doesn't have much clear conception of spirituality. In jnana, one starts getting the Brahman conception, one tries to search for that Brahman. In dhyana, one starts focusing on the Paramatma. And in bhakti, one starts focusing on Bhagavan. So that's how this is the normal hierarchy. That karma yoga is karma falatyaga, then jnana, then dhyana, and then bhakti. But what does this verse say? Shreyo hi jnanam abhyasat, jnanat dhyanam vishishyate, jnanat karma falatyagam. So now, it's very interesting that actually karma falatyag would be the fourth level normally. So karma falatyag, then jnana, then dhyana, and then abhyasa. But here it is telling, dhyanat karma falatyagam, tyagat chantiranantaram. So it is saying that actually better than, so it's become almost like this. So there is jnana, better than jnana is dhyana, but better than dhyana is karma falatyaga. And if one this karma falatyaga, then what exactly is abhyasa? Sheyo hi jnanam abhyasa. So actually abhyasa is put lower. So if abhyasa refers to bhakti, then what is actually happening over here? So first of all, abhyasa, if it's referring to bhakti yoga, it should be the highest, and karma phala tyag should be lowest among this hierarchy. But the hierarchy is, this is the hierarchy. Now please try to understand what I'm saying, understand the problem, then we'll see how the different acharyas have so brilliantly tried to come up with a solution. So the normal hierarchy is first karma yoga, karma phala tyag, then jnana, then dhyana, and then after that is abhyasa yoga, that is bhakti. But the Bhagavad Gita 12.12 is inverting this hierarchy by saying that abhyasa yoga is the lowest, then jnana, sheyo hi jnanam abhyasa. So as compared to abhyas, jnana is higher, then jnana dhyanam visheshyate, dhyana is higher than that, and after that is karma phala tyag. So karma phala tyag is not such an elevated level. So why is it saying like this? So Srila Prabhupada explains this in a simple way, by changing the referent. By changing the referent means, sometimes this happens in language. When we are talking, we may be referring to you or he. But he, in my mind, may be somebody else. And the other person may think that he refers to this person, so and so person. But I may be having some other person in mind. So we have to understand what is the, when there is an ambiguous reference like that. It's a pronoun is there, that in English it's often called a misunderstanding that comes because of the ambiguous antecedent. Antecedent means that which has come before, that which is being referred to. So if I start with this or he at the start of a paragraph, for example, now if I start this Bhakti Shastri course, and then I start by saying that, you know, he said that he is very angry with everyone. I wonder, who is this he? Because I have not mentioned who is that he. So if I start something with just he, then the antecedent, what is this he referring to? He is a pronoun which refers to something. What does that refer to? That can sometimes be confusing. So now when it's right at the start of a conversation, we'll understand it's obviously confusing. But sometimes in the middle of a conversation also, it may become a little confusing, because I may refer to a particular person, but I may be discussing a particular person, but my thoughts go to somebody else, and others don't follow my thought. When I use the word he, I might be referring to somebody else, and others may not be sure clear about that. So what Srila Prabhupada explains is, let's look at Prabhupada's explanation of this, then we'll look at the Acharya's explanation. So Prabhupada says 12.12 refers back not to 12.11 but to 12.10. What does this mean? That actually when Krishna is giving a hierarchy over here, karma falatyaga. So that karma falatyaga is not referring to 12.11 but is referring to 12.10, mat karma paramo bhava. So here, now the word abhyasa, it doesn't always have to refer to bhakti only. We'll see that the word abhyasa essentially means practice. So Krishna has used the word abhyasa many times. Probably among the most well-known verses is Krishna's reply to Arjuna's question on Chanchalam Himanha Krishna in 3.33 and 34. So in 35 and 36, when Krishna replies, at that time he says, असंशयं महाबाहो मनोदुर्निग्रहं चलं अभ्यासेन तु कौन्तेय वैराग्येन च गृह्यते. By practice and by detachment, you'll be able to conquer the mind. It's difficult to control, but you'll be able to. So the word abhyas is, in one sense, non-specific word. It's practice. What that practice may be, we don't know. So it can be the practice of karma yoga. It can be the practice of jnana yoga. It can be the practice of dhyana yoga. It can be the practice of bhakti yoga. Now, we might presume that from the context, the word abhyas has been used in 12.9. Abhyasa yoge natato mamichaptum dhananjaya. So, the word has been used abhyas over there. So, therefore, this abhyas will refer to that. What is being talked about in 12.9. But then we discussed earlier how that doesn't make any sense. So, you know, we have to look at the, when the word, the meanings of the words are not just situated in the dictionary. We have to see the words in their broader context. And words in Sanskrit are multivalent. One word can have many meanings. That's true of all languages actually. So because of that, because words are multivalent, therefore, we should focus on understanding the meanings of words based on the overall agreement of those meanings with the message of the book. So here Prabhupada explains abhyasa to refer to nishkam karma yoga, and then he says that karma phala tyaga so that karma phala tyaga is referring to not just the tyaga of karma yoga, that is referring to mat karma paramo bhava in 12.10. So in this way, then the hierarchy makes sense. Let's look at the hierarchy once again now. So what is Krishna telling? Let's look at shreyo hi jnanam abhyasaj. So jnana is better than abhyasa. So if abhyasa refers to nishkam karma yoga, then certainly jnana is higher. Then jnana dhyanam visheshyate. Dhyana is higher than jnana. That is also true. Then dhyanat karma phala tyagas. So, how is this? That actually if the karma phala refers to the karma that is offered to Krishna, then definitely that bhakti is higher than dhyana. And then if that is the case, then we also have this tyaga chantiranantaram. Krishna has said this in 5.29 also. Jnatva mam shanti mrichati. And we'll get supreme shanti. So this is the explanation that Srila Prabhupada gives. Now of course Srila Prabhupada also doesn't very specifically say this. So we have to look at Srila Prabhupada's purports and study it repeatedly, and Bhurijan Prabhu in his Surrender Unto Me has also elaborated on this, and that this is the understanding we can get about how Srila Prabhupada is resolving it. Now let's try to understand how Baladev Vidyabhushan resolves this. So Baladev Vidyabhushan, so the way he takes it is, he does two special things in his insight. So first is, he says shreyo and vishishyate. These do not necessarily mean that they are higher in the hierarchy, but he says they are easier to perform for the unqualified. That means they are more accessible. So shreyo and vishishyate are not from the perspective of the absolute truth. Because here Krishna is accommodating various levels of people, and because he is accommodating various levels of people, so what is higher, what is special, what is better, that is not point the point of view of absolute, that is point of view of accessibility for the seeker. So what Krishna is telling over here is that shreyo hi jnanam abhyasa jnana. So let's look at this now. Shreyo hi jnanam abhyasan jnanat dhyanam vishishyate manat karma phala tyaga shantiranantaram. So if we look at it from the point of view of the overall hierarchy, this very naturally gels with the hierarchy of the Bhagavad Gita. So easier to perform for the unqualified. So yes, karma yoga, it is easier to perform because one who doesn't know anything about transcendence, one doesn't know about Brahman, Paramatma or Bhagavan very clearly, just understand this material world is a place of entanglement, I want to get out of it. For that person, Karma Yoga is the easiest to perform. So in that sense, this is the most accessible. Then, after that, Dhyana is there. Tayohi Jnanam Abhyasad Jnanat Dhyanam Vishishyate Dhyanat Karma Phala Tyagam. So then, actually speaking, for this person who is trying to seek spiritual advancement, then relatively speaking among these two, Dhyana and Jnana, which is easier? It varies, but the way the Bhagavad Gita hierarchy has progressed, the Bhagavad Gita has preferred, if we see, in the second to five chapters, Krishna talks about Karma Yoga, and then Krishna doesn't talk about Jnana Yoga directly, Krishna talks about Dhyana Yoga. So the way Krishna has presented it, actually, he recommends Dhyana Yoga more than Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga. So Dhyana Yoga is there, then after that Jnana Yoga is there, certainly. So actually the idea is one starts with detachment, then one starts contemplating the absolute truth, and then one gets acquired self-knowledge. And then after that, when one starts practicing Bhakti, the practice of remembering Krishna, then one will be at a very steady level, So we see this in 7.17 and 18 also. In 7.17 and 18, 7.16, Krishna talks about the four kinds of people who approach him. And then he says, among them, the jnani is the best. Tesham jnani nitya yukta eka bhaktir vishishyate. Jnani is the best among them. So in that sense, after jnana, the sadhana bhakti that is performed is very strong, if one goes that way. This is how this Baldev Vidya Bhushan analyzes this hierarchy. So the critical insight which he uses is, Shreya and Vishishyate does not talk about from the perspective of ultimately what is the best. It talks from the perspective of what is most accessible for the seeker who does not have any other spiritual qualification, any spiritual qualification per se. Now we generally say Bhakti is the most accessible. So Sukham Kartum Avyayam. So if Bhakti is the most accessible, then why is it being said over here that this is the most accessible, that Karma Yoga is the most accessible? See, Bhakti becomes accessible when there is Kripa. But it's not that Kripa is available for everyone all the time. So when the Kripa is not available, then Karma Yoga is the best way for a person to move forward. Now we'll have to become a little more technical. So now let's try to understand what Vishwanatha Chakravarti does. We have seen how Vishwanatha Chakravarti specializes in giving technical different levels. So first let's see how Chakravarti Pad does this in terms of all the verses. So he says that this hierarchy, this is Vishwanatha Chakravarti explains of a hierarchy from 12.8 to 11. So first he says there are aspects of bhakti which are internal and external. So he says within the internal there are two levels, that is smaranatmika and mananatmika. So smaranatmika, so these are actually the two in the 12.8 itself. So in 12.8 was mai eva mana dhatsva mai buddhim niveshaya. So mai eva mana dhatsva. Now the way Srila Prabhupada explains this, Prabhupada put this whole verse in one level. What is that? Our whole inner life and our inner world is offered to Krishna. That's how Srila Prabhupada explains it. That's a perfectly valid explanation. But another way of looking at it is that the mind and intelligence refer to two different levels. See, generally in the spiritual path, it is easier to become intellectually convinced than to become mentally purified or mentally transformed. Now, it is, if I just contemplate the philosophy and analyze seriously, I can understand that, okay, sense gratification leads to misery. But then that itself does not mean that I will lose the desire for sense gratification. I may still very well have the desire and I will have to battle with that desire. So once the mind accepts something, that means we have more or less become realized. If the mind accepts it, this thing leads to misery, I will not do this. And that's a very steady platform for self-realization. That's what is being recommended over here. That the mind should become purified. So that's why smaranatmika, where the mind is meditating on Krishna with the mind. So 12.8a is considered to be higher level. This is Mananatmika Bhakti. And then below that is, this is Smaranatmika Bhakti. With the mind, we remember, spontaneously we remember things. Smaranatmika Bhakti, that is meditating on Krishna with the mind. Then he says Mananatmika, then after that is Manan. Now generally we might mistake the word Manan with mind. But the word Manan is conscious contemplation. See, generally when we say Smaran, Smaran is more like spontaneous recollection. So what is the difference between two? A spontaneous recollection and conscious contemplation. Spontaneous recollection means if we love somebody, even a mother loves a child, and then she sees maybe some baby paraphernalia at a friend's house. Immediately, the thoughts go towards, oh, what will my baby be doing? That's spontaneous recollection. So when there is Smaranatmika, there is spontaneous recollection. But before for us to come to that level, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is at that level. As soon as he would see a river, he would think, oh, he would think of the Jamuna immediately. A spontaneous recollection. But for us, we don't have that. So we have to come first begin with conscious contemplation. So conscious contemplation and then spontaneous recollection. So conscious contemplation is Smananatmika, Mananatmika. That means one contemplates seriously, soberly. And by such serious, sober contemplation, one slowly rises to higher levels. So, here one may not have an attraction. It's like if somebody has to solve a problem of mathematics. Now, it's not that the person is in love with mathematics. But the person understands, okay, for this exam I have to solve this problem. So, let me think seriously about it. That is conscious contemplation. So, this is one level lower. But both of them are internal bhakti. The mind is fixed, the intelligence is fixed. Now, then Chakravarti Path says that the next level is Abhyasa Rupa. Abhyasa Rupa is 12.9. Abhyasa Yogena Tato Mami Chaptum Dhananjaya. So by the practice of Abhyasa, strive to gain the desire for me. You know, strive to attain me. So endeavor to fix the mind on Krishna. That is Abhyasa Rupa. So why Abhyasa Rupa? Because the form here is practice. These are internal bhakti. And then Chakravarti Pada goes and says the next two levels so are external bhakti. External bhakti is what? First is mat artha karma. That is work for me. So when he says work for me, that is serve Krishna with external senses even if mind is not on him. So work for example, when we say decide to do some service for Krishna, maybe we are doing some making some flowers for Krishna, cooking for Krishna, or maybe carrying some, helping clean the temple, carrying some things here and there. So when we are doing that, it may not be that our mind is fixed on Krishna at that time. It may well be that our mind is running here and there. But still, externally we engage ourselves in the practice of, in the devotional service externally. So that is external bhakti. And then he says, this is 12.10, and then 12.11 is what? Nishkam Karma Yoga offered to Krishna. So, when Krishna is talking about 12.11, Chakravarti Pad, he explains that even when Krishna is saying Sarva Karma Falatyagam Tata Kuru Yata Atmaman, that do Karma Falatyaga, that give up the fruits of work, then he is saying that actually his point is, Chakravarti Pad's point is, this whole section is talking about Bhakti only. The chapter is Bhakti Yoga, the section before this has talked about Bhakti Yoga, and the section after this has talked about Bhakti Yoga. So because the section before and the section after are all about Bhakti Yoga, so even this section is about Bhakti Yoga only. And that's why his point is that even if Krishna doesn't use the word explicitly Maam, so still the Maam is understood, that it is to be offered to Krishna. So he analyzes these two different levels as Madartha Karma means directly working for Krishna, and Sarva Karma Falatyagam means that doing whatever work is our circumstantial requirement, but then offering it to Krishna. So first is doing the work of Krishna. That means whatever Krishna wants us to do it. Second is what we want, we do it, but we offer the fruits of it to Krishna. So in this way, these are two distinct levels, but both of them help one to move upwards towards Krishna. Now, with this context in mind, this is hierarchy. I'll repeat this hierarchy because this is important to understand how he resolves the problem of 12.12. So basically he categorizes these verses 8 to 11 into 5 categories. So 2 categories come in, 3 categories come in internal bhakti, 2 in external bhakti. So in the internal bhakti, first is the mind is spontaneously attracted to Krishna and is lost in remembrance of Krishna, that is smaranatmika. The second is that one consciously fixes the mind on Krishna with and does intellectual contemplation, that is mananatmika. And the lower below that is in 12.9, that is one is trying to fix the mind on Krishna, whether it is intellectually or whatever, one is not successful, the mind goes here and there, but then one fixes it on him, and that is abhyasa rupa. So now outside in the external level, one works for Krishna or one does whatever work one has to do and then offers it to Krishna. These are two levels of external bhakti. So now with this understanding of the previous hierarchy, now let us see how Chakravarti Pad resolves the problem. So now 12.12 says Shreyo hi jnanam abhyasad. So now he says, according to him, the word jnana refers to manan atmika bhakti. The word jnana refers to, because jnana generally is the intellectual faculty and dhyana involves the mental faculty. So manan is contemplation, it's fixing the intelligence. So as compared to abhyasa, jnana is higher, which is natural. Means one is striving to fix the mind on Krishna and one is fixing the mind on Krishna. Then better than jnana is dhyana. Why? Because here not only is one intellectually trying to absorb oneself in Krishna, but one is at the level of the mind spontaneously attracted to Krishna and is recollecting Krishna. So smaranatmika is higher than mananatmika. So in this way, till by explaining what jnana and dhyana mean from the context of the hierarchy as he has explained earlier, Chakravarti Pad resolves this. Now interestingly, if we look at this words, you know, there are these words Shreya and Vishishyate. Shreya and Vishishyate means superior or better. Now there are no such words in the third and the fourth line. Now there is no explicit word Dhyanat Karma Falatyagas, Dhyanat Karma Falatyagas Vishishyate. So there is no such word like that. So what Chakravarti Pad takes this to mean is that the relationship between two is not a relationship of comparative hierarchy, but it is a relationship of a causal chain. What do I mean that? It's not a comparative hierarchy means, it's not that Dhyanat Karma Falatyagas, that Karma Falatyaga is higher than Dhyana. It says no, Dhyanat Karma Falatyagas means from Dhyana, Karma Falatyaga will come. So what does it mean? So he says Karma Falatyaga refers to Bhava Bhakti. Why Bhava Bhakti? Because at the level of Bhava Bhakti, there is no desire for Bhukti and Mukti. When there is no desire for Bhukti and Mukti, naturally then Karma Falatyaga. So Dhyana refers to Bhava Bhakti. And when one is at the level of Bhava Bhakti, then what happens? With the Tyaga that results from it, Tyaga leads to Shanti. So this can be correlated with Krishna Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakale Ashanta, Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Ataeva Shanta. So ataeva shanta, when does the person become peaceful? When the person has no independent desires apart from the desire to serve Krishna. This is how we, now let's look, understand this from another perspective. So what is he saying? So as compared to abhyasa, jnana is better. So what does that mean? That means as compared to jnana refers to mananatmika bhakti. Instead of struggling to fix the mind on Krishna, if one's intelligence is convinced, then one will fix the mind on Krishna. And better than that is, if one's mind is spontaneously attracted to Krishna, then there will be spontaneous meditation on Krishna. And when there is such meditation on Krishna, then that makes one detach from everything else. One has no other desires and naturally tyaga, renunciation comes about. And when there is tyaga, there is shanti. So in this way, this is a very insightful explanation that multiple acharyas have given. So some devotees, you know, some of you may be, you know, pulling your hair trying to understand what is going on. It all seems so complex. So we have to understand that actually the Bhagavad Gita is the word of God. In terms of conclusions, it's very clear, but in terms of technicalities, there are complexities. And you know, these complexities have been done gloriously they have been researched by our acharyas, and painstakingly they have given explanations. But sometimes some devotees have this romantic idea about studying previous acharyas' purports. They think that studying previous acharyas' works means, you know, there are some esoteric pastimes of Radha and Krishna, how Radha and Krishna when they grows of Vrindavan, how they embraced each other, and then when I read that, my hair will stand on end and then I'll feel ecstasy. So some devotees have this romantic conceptions of the previous acharyas' commentaries. Now we shouldn't have only that kind of conception. The acharyas, when they are writing their commentaries, certainly their hearts are devoted to Krishna, but they are also offering their heads to Krishna. That means they are using all their intelligence to comprehend Krishna's words and glorify Krishna's message. So studying the acharyas' commentaries is also hard work. It's not just devotional ecstasy in terms of, you know, knowing some pastime which nobody else knows. Most devotees, when they want to study the acharyas' commentaries, what they want to do, they want to read some books like some books on pastimes where they can find some new stories which nobody knows, and then impress others. Oh, I know the story about Krishna. Yes, that is also a part of our legacy that the acharyas have given us. But the acharyas have also done serious philosophical study, and that is also there as a part of our legacy. So both of them are important, and Tattva Gyan which the Gaudiya Sampradaya acharyas have given us is remarkable. When the deeper we go into it, the more we appreciate it. So of course now I have not gone into in our Sampradaya, Baldev Devashan and Chakravarti Pada are the primary commentators. That's why I have not gone into the commentaries of the other acharyas over here while explaining this. But suffice it to say that there is, even if we want some intellectual nectar, there is so much intellectual nectar within the jurisdiction of devotional service itself. And for those of us who find this very complex, then we don't have to get overwhelmed. For us, Srila Prabhupada has been very merciful. And Srila Prabhupada consistently sticks to the fundamentals. Because ultimately, the important point is to apply the fundamentals. See, we can look at it from two different perspectives. There's a doctor. And the doctor, when the doctor has to give medicine, the doctor will give the medicine. Okay, take this medicine, this medicine, this medicine. So Prabhupada, chant Hare Krishna, practice devotional service, and you will become purified. Eventually, you will become liberated. That's the prescription. But for the doctor to give that prescription, the doctor has to study. And when we look at the medical science behind that, that can be quite complex. So similarly, now Prabhupada gives us the philosophy, but Prabhupada also focuses on an emergency mode sort of presentation and treatment. He doesn't go into technicalities too much. But for those who want to go into the technicalities, there is abundant room for intellectual investigation and intellectual relish within devotional service also. And those who find this overwhelming, we can focus on Srila Prabhupada's books and we can relish the simplicity of the process that he has given and the potency of that process in bringing transformation in our hearts. So in the next chapter, next class, we'll discuss about the qualities that endear oneself to Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.